106.6.
That was Donna Summer and on the radio. And you're listening to the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson. Now, first of all, this show this week, sorry, I didn't realise that there's a Kim Wilde song that was going to start then. It shouldn't have done. I'm not quite sure what's happened there. But anyway, in this first hour, we'll be looking at films. The whole show is about movies, video games and TV. And in this first section of the show, the first hour, rather, we've got a review of Limitless featuring Bradley Cooper. We've got the top 10 movie charts, the new cinema releases, including Conan the Barbarian and Final Destination 5, some new DVD releases, including Scream 4 and Red Riding Hood, and also some film news. And first of all, we begin with Bradley Cooper discovering what's limitless. Now, Limitless begins with Eddie Mora, Bradley Cooper, wearing a smart suit and standing atop a high building, about to throw himself off from the penthouse suite. But why? Well, if I say it's because baddies are around and killing everyone to get to him, that won't really explain anything further. Telling the film in flashback, he's a writer, and a bad one at that, despite somehow having sorted out a book contract. I say somehow, as several months pass and he still can't get a girlfriend. Still can't get a single word written on the page. To make matters worse, his long-term girlfriend Lindy, Abby Cornish, has just ended their relationship. By chance, he meets Thurnan, Johnny Whitworth, his ex-brother-in-law, who sells him NZT, a new kind of pill. This isn't something that'll get him high. It's one that'll allow him to use 100% of his brain, rather than the 20% on which the rest of us get by. As such, he can supercharge his productivity to the point where he completes his book within 4 days. The trouble is, to buy these costs $800 a piece, and they need to be taken daily. However, it soon proves fruitful when he manages to inadvertently charm his landlord's young wife after she kicks off at him for not paying the rent, as he spots the corner of a law book in a bag, which he recalls from seeing in a girl's apartment. Seeing in a girl's apartment 12 years ago. Then goes on to recommend a better text, along with other ways to make a coursework more intriguing, and something that'll stand out from the rest of the crowd. Naturally, she initially thinks there's something suspicious going on, but a quick trip to the bedroom later, and these tablets are certainly showing their worth. Other plus points come in the form of being able to play piano in 3 days, he becomes fluent in foreign languages, and he can pull any woman he chooses. However, there's also the downsides. The side effects soon begin to take their toll, and director Neil Berger uses some clever visual tricks to show off how this happens. Oh, and there's also the issue of running out of the happy pills just when you need them most, something which is pinpointed after he attracts the attention of business mogul Carl Van Loon, Robert De Niro, by turning $12,000 into $2.3 million in 10 days. And Van Loon is a ruthless businessman, and you really don't want to disappoint when you're climbing the ladder. Throw in some Russian heavies and what first sounded like a fun comedy drama, when I originally saw the trailer, it turns out to be a very downbeat drama, but also very engaging stuff. Bradley Cooper proves to be more than just a pretty boy actor, putting in a good turn when his character is at his lowest ebb. Robert De Niro is reasonable, but at times he's just phoning it in. There's also a cameo from Anna Friel as Melissa, the woman to whom he was once married. Aside from obviously being the link between Eddie and Vernon, I won't go into detail about where her character fits into all this, as that would just be rather too much of a spoiler. This is a kind of a film where it's good just to sit down and just let it wash over you, because it really is cracking stuff. So overall, Limitless is a film which I'd highly recommend. And after all, who wouldn't like to try one of those little pills? So overall, it's much better than I thought. Well, I thought it was going to be good anyway, but it turned out to be even better than I thought. And I'd give that one 9 out of 10. So, in a moment, we'll be having the movie charts. And hopefully, if I can get this music thing to work, I'll be having Electronic and Disappointed. So this is 106.6 live from North Manchester.
106.6.
And in this section, we're going to be having a look at the movie charts. Now, I'll go through the US movie charts here, as I mentioned several times before, because it just seems to be impossible to find where the UK ones are anywhere these days, even on the Internet Movie Database. Anyway, climbing to number one, we've got The Help, which has taken just over $20 million in this past week. Set in Mississippi during the 1960s, Skeeter, Emma Stone, is a Southern society girl who returns from college determined to be a writer, but turns her friends' lives and a Mississippi town upside down when she decides to interview the black women who have spent their lives taking care of prominent Southern families, but who are done down by the fact that they're not treated as equals. For example, in not even being able to use the same bathroom as the residents of the house. Abilene, Viola Willis, Skeeter's best friend's housekeeper, is the first to open up, to the dismay of her friends in the tight-knit black community. Despite Skeeter's lifelong friendships hanging in the balance, she and Abilene continue their collaboration, and soon more women come forward to tell their stories. And as it turns out, they have a lot to say. Along the way, unlikely friendships are forged, and a new sisterhood emerges. Not before everyone in town has a thing or two to say themselves when they become unwittingly and unwillingly caught up in the changing times. Now, watching the trailer, it just looks like a typical life-affirming chick flick, where everything first goes wrong, and then eventually goes right, and everything in the garden is rosy. I just thought it was sickly sweet American junk, and I'd recommend you to avoid it. Then, I mean, to be honest, it doesn't look like the kind of film that's for blokes, really. So, yeah, maybe, yeah, I just give it a miss. That's what I'd say. Down to number two this week, we've got Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Now, I thought watching the trailer for this, it just seemed to play out exactly as you'd expect, and it hasn't grabbed me, so I've not gone to see it, but I always thought it can't be any worse than Tim Burton's version back in 2001 with Helena Bonham Carter. And who was the other one? Mark Wahlberg. Glad I just plodded along for 2 hours and just served to be predictable and boring. But for those who are interested in this new film, that one's out now. Now also, number three, we've got Spy Kids, All the Time in the World in 4D. And on the surface, Marissa Cortez Wilson, Jessica Alba, has it all. Married to a famous spy-hunting television reporter, she has a new baby and intelligent twin stepkids. But in reality, trying to mother Rebecca and Cecil, who clearly don't want her around, is her toughest challenge yet. Also, her husband Wilbur, Joel McHale, wouldn't know a spy if he lived with one, which is exactly the case, because Marissa's a retired secret agent. Marissa's world is turned upside down when the maniacal timekeeper, Jeremy Piven, threatens to take over the planet, and she's called back into action by the head of OSS, home of the greatest spies and where the now-defunct Spy Kids division was created. With Armageddon quickly approaching, Rebecca and Cecil are thrust into action when they learn their boring stepmom was once a top agent. Now the world's most competitive 10-year-olds are forced to put their bickering aside and rely on their wits. With a little help from a couple of very familiar spy kids, Carmen and Junie Cortez, and some mind-blowing gadgets, they may just be able to save the world and possibly bring their family together while they're at it. Now, in short, from the trailer, there's a baddie stopping time, there's two annoying kids, and a talking dog, voiced by Ricky Gervais. I do normally rather like Ricky Gervais when he's putting together a programme or a film he's created, but pretty much everything else is junk. Number four, we've got Conan the Barbarian, new version of that. Now, full information on that will be in the new releases section, but for now, it's only taken $10 million at the box office over the weekend in America, and that's a pathetic amount of money to take, you know, when it's just been hyped beyond belief. Number five, we've got the remake of Fright Night. So, yeah, the original of that came out in 1985, and in this film, teenager Charlie Brewster, Anton Yelchin, guesses that his new neighbour, Jerry Dandridge, Colin Farrell, is a vampire responsible for a string of recent deaths. When no one he knows believes him, he enlists Peter Vincent, David Tennant, a self-proclaimed vampire killer and Las Vegas magician, to help take him down. This film's also got Toni Collette, Imogen Poots, Chris Sarandon and Lisa Loeb. I remember once having a song in the charts, but I didn't know she'd become an actress. But now I've neglected to see the trailer for this one, so I'll try and check that out in time for next week. If you do want to, if you have got anything to say about that, just have a, you know, if you've seen the trailer, or if you've, well, you wouldn't have seen the film yet because it's not come out yet. Go and have a look at the... Well, I forgot to mention, because I got interrupted by the music carrying on. You can have a look at any... If you've got anything to say about the show, and you want to see any trailers for anything, except for the one for Friday Night, just go on, get in touch via the Facebook page, which is facebook.com/thedvdfevershow. And also I've got to say that dvdfever.co.uk is a non-profit website, and that's recently had a revamp, so please do take a look at that. And number six, we've got the Smurfs. Number seven, we've got Final Destination 5. And this is coming out in the UK this week as well, but in this one, the film opens up with co-workers gathering together for a company retreat. Sam Lawton has prepared the breakfast before the bus ride. His best friend Peter is awaiting everyone else's arrival for the trip. Molly Harper, Sam's girlfriend, arrives, and she then breaks up with him due to his dreams of going to Paris to be an apprentice for his mentor. Meanwhile, Peter's girlfriend Candice, an intern for the company and a gymnast, comes along with rival Olivia Castle. Molly is hit on by Isaac Palmer, a co-worker and womaniser. Sam then goes on to the construction wing of the building to find his other friend, Nathan Gregory, a supervisor who has a hard time dealing with construction worker Roy. Nathan and Sam regroup and head on the bus to their destination. As the bus head on the bridge, Sam notices the road's construction is rather suspicious, and he begins to have weird feelings while on the bus. The bus is stopped by a traffic operator, and the bridge starts to crack. Sam watches as each of the co-workers dies, excluding Molly, who reaches safety. Sam then comes to, realising the incident has yet to occur. He and Molly leave the bus, and Peter, Candice, Olivia, and Nathan, Isaac and Dennis follow. The bridge collapses, and Sam rushes all of his friends to safety. Well, you know what will happen next. Now, I haven't seen the fourth film yet, which is entitled The Final Destination, so they clearly lied. And there's no one famous in the cast other than Tony Todd, again. Watching the trailer, it does look like a great deal of fun, though, so I'll be sure to catch up with number four before seeing this. Number eight, we've got 30 Minutes or Less. Now, Nick Jesse Eisenberg is a slacking pizza delivery driver who has trouble completing the 30 minutes or less policy that his employers issue, and it causes him to get yelled at by his boss, Brett Gelman. He hangs out with his friend Chet, Aziz Ansari, a substitute teacher. After a nasty argument between the two over Chet finding out that Nick had sex with Chet's sister Katie, whom Nick still has feelings for, and Nick finding out that Chet was the reason Nick's parents divorced after he told Nick's dad his wife had an affair with a lifeguard, they break off their friendship. However, one day Nick has to deliver a pizza to a house owned by two men dressed in monkey masks, who strap a bomb to his chest and tell him that he has to rob a bank within 9 hours, otherwise they'll set it off. Cue a fast trip over to the school to pick up Chet, and then to the bank. Now, watching the trailer, there were a couple of laughs here, and it looked slightly intriguing, but it comes from the director of Zombieland, which, for my money, was fantastic and inventive for the first 30 minutes, and then just completely fell apart. So I can't wholly recommend this. Also in the top 10, we've got number 9, we've got One Day, which will be coming up in the next section, and number 10, Crazy Stupid Love. Okay, so that's your top 10 for this week. In a moment, we have a look at the cinema releases out in the UK on this coming Friday. But in a moment, well, for now, we are going to have Kim Wilde properly with Checkered Love. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Now, in this section, we'll be having a look at the cinema releases coming out this Friday. And we're starting off with Conan the Barbarian. Now, as the film begins, a young Sumerian boy, Conan, is being educated by his father Corin on the importance of steel to their people. Soon after, a group of warriors, led by a warlord, systematically destroys Conan's village to obtain part of a mask in Corin's possession. Left to die with his son, who is holding the vat of molten metal placed above him, Corin sacrifices himself so Conan can live. Having ventured into an unforgiving world, hunting down the warlords for years, and now adult Conan finally gets the lead when he learns Lucius, one of the men who ransacked Conan's village, whose nose he chopped off, became a warden. Allowing himself to be imprisoned, Conan confronts Lucius, learning that the warlord is known as Kalar Zim, before forcing him to swallow the keys to every prisoner's shackles so Lucius would be slaughtered by them. On his path of revenge, Conan chances upon Tamara, a beautiful and studious novitiate or of a monastery, who's actually a bloodline of necromancers, whose blood Zim needs to restore the mask so he can use its power to revive his wife. As he tracks Carlisle Zim, Conan battles monsters, Zim's henchmen, and Marik, a powerful witch. Starring Jason Momoa as Conan, Rachel Nichols as Tamara, Stephen Lang as Carlisle Zim, Ron Perlman as Corin, and Rose McGowan as Marik. Now, watching the trailer, it looks like a good bit of boys' own action adventure nonsense with zero degree of subtlety to it. However, bear in mind how little it's taken in the US this weekend, which is, let's say, it was only about $10 million. It must have clearly cost a lot of money to make as well, so unless it, you know, bucks its ideas up, it's going to make a massive loss. Also out this Friday, we've got One Day. Now, Dexter and Emma spend the night together following their graduation from Edinburgh University in 1988. Though they do not become romantically involved, they become friends, and in subsequent years, their lives take them in different directions, but they keep in contact. The novel visits their lives on 15th of July in successive years, in each chapter for 20 years. Emma becomes a waitress in Kentish Town at a horrible Tex-Mex restaurant, while Dexter becomes a successful television presenter. Dexter becomes increasingly addicted to alcohol and other drugs, and is often presented as a wreck. Gradually, Emma fulfills her ambitions, first as a teacher and then as a best-selling novelist. Conversely, Dexter's career collapses, going from presenting a mainstream TV show to cable TV, to being fired from a late-night video games review show. Oh, I could do that. Each of the main characters have their relationships with others, such as Emma with an unfunny stand-up comedian boyfriend Ian, and Dexter with a fellow TV presenter. Now I'll stop there because any further plot will give away too much, but it stars Anne Hathaway and Jim Sturgess in the lead roles. And watching the trailer, it's an interesting concept with the one day per year aspect of it, but it's still a drippy love story, so I'm going to pass on that. Also out this week is Final Destination 5, which I mentioned in the previous section with the American Top 10. I've also got The Skin I Live In. Now, this is a Spanish drama thriller directed by Pedro Almodovar, starring Antonio Banderas, Elena Anaya, Marisa Paredes, and Roberto Alamo. It's loosely based on Thierry Jonquet's novel Tarantula. The film was the first collaboration in 21 years between Almodovar and former regular cast member Banderas. It premiered in May this year in competition at the 64th Cannes Film Festival, and has also had its premiere in the UK at the Film 4 summer screen at Somerset House. Now, the film tells the story of a surgeon who tries to create a new human skin. Almodovar describes the film as a horror story without screams or frights. The accomplished surgeon, Robert Ledgard, Banderas, succeeds to cultivate a skin which can withstand any kind of assault. Such a skin would have been able to save his wife, who was burned in a car crash 12 years earlier. To his help, Ledgard has an accomplice, Marilia, Marisa Paredes, and a human guinea pig. Now, watch the trailer, but it only lasted 30 seconds, and you can't get an idea of the film from that. However, it's the Pedro Almodovar film, so it could either go hit or miss. Time Me Up, Time Me Down was good, but I don't remember being a great fan of Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown. Can't remember what else I've seen of his, actually. Also, finally out this week, we've got As Blood Runs Deep. Now, threads of the past weave through this interesting film about small-town folks and loyalties to each other when it comes to intervention out from the outside, even to the defence of homicide. Josh Sternfeld wrote and directed this little thriller with a small cast of young actors who may just be more noticed after this dramatic effort. Two boys, Eddie Arlinger, Kellen Lutz, and Shane Lowkin, Jonathan Tucker, drifters who go on the road to rob houses and sell their goods to pawn shops, though their relationship with a bar girl, Grace Gummer, accidentally kill a little boy during a robbery in Hilliard. The boy happens to be the son of a Muscada County Commissioner. Young small-town detective Noah Corden, Nick Stahl, and his new partner Leslie Spencer, Rachel Nichols, are brought to solve the crime despite the fact that the town sheriff and cohort think they can handle the matter themselves. Much of the clash is bringing in an outside detective who grew up in a small town not far from Hilliard, viewed as interference. The local bar owner, Billy, and Shane's brother-in-law, Dennis, fight to protect Eddie and Shane, but events occur that reveal the true identity of the killer after a showdown between the out-of-town detective and the townsfolk that come to grips with a situation that no one wants to explore. Now, the trailer did seem to have a lot going on in it, but there's also not a lot that's grabbing me, so it does come across as rather disappointing overall. I think that's coming out on DVD in a couple of weeks as well over here, so it's just getting a brief cinema release in the UK first of all. Okay, so that's your cinema releases out this Friday, and in a little while we'll be having the new DVDs out this week, but just have a little bit of music first of all, and we've got Joe Jackson with Stepping Out. It's 106.6.
106.6.
And in this section we'll have a look at the some of the DVDs out this week, starting with Scream 4. Now, it's quite a lot of DVD reviews, so I might split this up. The Scream 4, Sidney Prescott, now the author of a self-help book, returns home to Woodsboro on the last stop of a book tour. There she reconnects with Sheriff Dewey and Gail, who are now married, as well as a cousin Jill, played by Emma Roberts, and her aunt Kate, Mary McDonnell. Unfortunately, Sidney's appearance also brings about the return of Ghostface, putting Sidney, Gail and Dewey, along with Jill, her friends, and the whole town of Woodsboro in danger. The newest installments in the acclaimed franchise that ushered in a new wave of horror in the 1990s is written by series creator Kevin Williamson, and directed by suspense master and director of the first trilogy, Wes Craven. The film stars Nev Campbell, Courtney Cox, David Arquette, Aidan Panettiere, Rory Culkin, Mary McDonnell, Kristen Bell, Anna Paquin, and Brittany Robertson. Now, watching the trailer for this one, I liked the first one, and the second one was okay. I only saw bits of the third, as by then I'd lost interest, but although this one's subtitled New Decade, New Rules, it really is just more of the same guff, so watch it if you care. Then we've got The Vampire Diaries Season 2. This series follows the life of Elena Gilbert, Nina Dobrev, a 17-year-old girl who falls for a dark 162-year-old vampire named Stefan Salvatore, played by Paul Wesley. Their relationship becomes increasingly complicated as Stefan's vicious and malevolent elder brother Damon returns with a plan to wreak havoc on the town, and also plan a revenge against his younger brother. Both brothers begin to show affection towards Elena, mainly because of a resemblance to their past love, Catherine Pierce. It is revealed that Elena is descended from Catherine, who eventually returns with plans against the trio. Now, I haven't seen The Vampire Diaries, season 1 or season 2, but if it's your bag, then you'll get the series. Also out this week, we've got Red Riding Hood, which is a romantic fantasy thriller. Now, Valerie, Amanda Seyfried, is a beautiful young woman torn between two men. She's in love with a brooding outsider, Peter, Shiloh Fernandez, but her parents have arranged for her to marry the wealthy Henry, Max Irons. Unwilling to lose each other, Valerie and Peter are planning to run away together when they learn that Valerie's older sister has been killed by the werewolf that prowls the dark forest surrounding their village. For years, the people have maintained an uneasy truce with the beast, offering the creature a monthly animal sacrifice. But under a blood-red moon, the wolf has upped the stakes by taking a human life. Hungry for revenge, the people call upon famed werewolf hunter Father Solomon, Gary Oldman, to help them kill the wolf. But Solomon's arrival brings unintended consequences, as he warns that the wolf, who takes human form by day, could be any one of them. As the death toll rises with each moon, Valerie begins to suspect that the werewolf could be someone she loves. Panic grips the town as Valerie discovers that she has a unique connection to the beast, one that inexorably draws them together, making her both suspect and bait. Now, the trailer plays out like an over-the-top fairy tale, I thought. So, it's the kind of thing you'd expect, but it doesn't really grab me. In a moment, we'll have a look at a couple more new DVDs out this week, but a little bit of music first of all. We've got Ghostbusters from Ray Parker Jr. This is 106.6.
106.6.
And in this section, we're just continuing the look at the rest of the DVDs that are out this week. And we've got the Big Lebowski Special Edition, Now, it's a casually amusing follow-up to the provincially inventive Coen Brothers. It seems like a bit of a lark, and the result was a box office disappointment. Its lazy plot is part of its laid-back charm. After all, how many movies can claim their hero as a pot-bellied, pot-smoking loser named Jeff the Dude Lebowski, Jeff Bridges, who spends most of his time bowling and getting stoned? And where else could you find a hair-knitted Latino bowler named Jesus, John Turturro, who sports dazzling purple footgear? Or an erotic artist, Julianne Moore, whose creativity consists of covering her naked body in paint, flying through the air in a leather harness, and splatting herself against a giant canvas? And who else but the Coens could think of showing you a camera view from inside the holes of a bowling ball? Or an elaborate, Busby Barclay-style musical dream sequence involving a Viking goddess and giant bowling pins? Now, I saw The Big Lebowski when it first came out, and I know it's championed as one of the best Coen Brothers films ever made, but for me, I thought it was just okay. So I give that 7 out of 10. Also out on DVD this week, and actually came out of the cinema fairly recently, another one with a limited release, The Referees. Now, how can a few crucial minutes in a football match change the life of an entire family? How do the men in black feel when they're attacked by supporters? The Referees, also known as Kill the Referee, unveils the lives of several professional football referees at the Euro 2008 Championship. Amongst them, the English referee Howard Webb, who provoked incredible controversy when he gave a penalty to Austria just before the end of the match with Poland, and the Italian Roberto Rossetti, who refereed the final. Now, I have to say that I hate football. I just find it incredibly boring, so I'm not going to vote a preference for this one. I'm watching the trailer. It hasn't changed my mind. Other films out this week, we've got Before the Revolution. special edition of Dragons Forever. Got Heart of the Dragon. Iron and Blood, The Legend of Taras Bulba. A double pack of Leggetti and Sans-Soleil. Level 5. Little White Lies. Mammoth. A special edition of Way of the Dragon. And also, the new version of Winnie the Pooh that's come out fairly recently. We've got some Blu-ray premieres. We've got Blues Brothers, also Blues Brothers 2000. Brotherhood of the Wolf, a box set of the first four Final Destination films, and Our Day Will Come. There's also a few TV series, such as both series of Supernatural on Blu-ray, and also one called 99 to 1, I think that had Leslie Grantham in it. Also Lee Nelson's Well Good Show, which just didn't work for me whatsoever. Also a double pack of Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy and Smiley's People. That's new DVD releases out for this week, and we're having some film news in a moment. First of all, let's have a little bit of music. We'll have Ian joining the Blockheads, Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll. This is 106.6.
106.6.
And a little bit of film news for you, starting off with the fact that three actresses are currently reading for the female lead opposite Tom Cruise's Jack Reacher in One Shot. And the three women that's up for it, as reported by The Hollywood Reporter, are Hayley Atwell, Alexa Davalos, and Rosamund Pike. They're all in contention for the role, which is said to be a tough female lawyer. Atwell proves a likably no-nonsense foil to Chris Evans' Captain America in this summer's superhero period piece. And given Cappy's fate, it looks like unlikely she'll be recruited for the Avengers. She also appeared in The Duchess and Brideshead Revisited, so she hasn't yet had a mainstream role in a modern-day setting. Alexa Davalos may not be a recognisable name, but she has a solid list of credits to her name, including Clash of the Titans, Defence, The Mist, and Chronicles of Riddick. Pike is probably the most experienced of the bunch, but despite getting an early breakout in Dying of the Day, she's never hit the A-list. That said, she has delivered some impressive supporting turns, such as in An Education and Barney's Version, amid some more generic fare, like Doom and Fracture. According to The Hollywood Reporter, Britt Marling from Another Earth was also on the list, but she bowed out early due to scheduling conflicts. The studio is said to be after a not-yet A-list actress for the role. Also, is Will Smith up for a Jim Cameron-produced Fantastic Voyage? Will Smith is currently being courted to star in sci-fi remake Fantastic Voyage, which has James Cameron and his light entertainment partner John Light Storm Entertainment, get me words out, partner John Landau producing. Sean Levy, Real Steel and Night at the Museum, is currently attached to direct, although he's said to be considering leaving the project if Smith doesn't agree to sign on. The pair are meeting over the next couple of weeks, but Levy is expected to move on if a deal can't be struck with Smith or another big-name star. Fantastic Voyage revolves around a team of scientists who are shrunk in order to pilot a tiny submarine inside a sick scientist's body. The original was released in 1966, but the conceit has been reused many times for the likes of Inner Space and episodes of Futurama and The Magic School Bus. Smith, who seems to be one of the world's few surefire box office draws, has been a little quiet on the acting front since 2008's Seven Pounds, though he's returning to Men in Black 3 next summer. As if we need another one of those. The first one, I thought, was brilliant, but the second one was just a complete and utter dismal failure, to put it politely. The actor's no stranger to big-budget sci-fi, but there's currently no indication of how interested he is in Fantastic Voyage, and Fox are apparently wary of spending the money on a big name. Real Steel's Hugh Jackman was once linked with the lead role, but that seems to have fallen by the wayside, possibly because he's so close to shooting The Wolverine. Also this week, just find it. Hang on. Sorry, one second. Yeah, well, Bruce Willis has been confirmed for G.I. Joe Retaliation. According to Dwayne The Rock Johnson. He tweeted, Welcome, brother Bruce Willis, to the cast of G.I. Joe. What an honour. # heavy artillery. The tweet confirms the rumours that Willis was circling the role of General Joe Colton in the sequel. For those unfamiliar with Joe Iyer, Colton was first introduced in the 1980s comic books and considered to be the first G.I. Joe. Do you think the studio is upset with Rock for jumping the gun and leaking the news via social media? Who is the executive that gets to make that phone call? You know, in terms of trying to sack him, I guess. Seriously, though, who can blame the actor? No doubt Willis was one of his idols, and Rock's just probably psyched just to share the screen with a bona fide action legend. The casting of Willis isn't as strange as one might assume. Remember the great Joseph Gordon-Levitt accepted a role in the original, and the always welcome Walter Goggins recently joined the cast of Retaliation, an ensemble that already includes Channing Tatum, Adrianne Palicki, Ray Park, Ray Stevenson as Firefly, and Jonathan Pryce as the President of the United States. Now we're left to wonder what Willis casting in the G.I. Joe sequel does to his involvement in a fifth Die Hard movie, which was reportedly shopping for a director. So we shall see. But that's the first half of the show for today. That's all your film news for this week and everything to do with films. I'll be having some video game stuff in the first half of the second hour, starting with a review of... I'm going to go for like a bit of a retro game review. It's going to be the Nomad Soul. It's a bit of an old game on the PC, but we'll see what that's like afterwards. But taking us up to the top of the hour, we've got Curiosity Killed the Cat and Down to Earth. This is 106.6.
106.6.
And you're back on 106.6, live from North Manchester, with a DVD Fever show with me, Don Robinson. Now, this hour, we'll have a look at some video games, first of all, with a review of a retro game, The Nomad Soul, on the PC. Top 10 games charts, new video games releases, including Deus Ex Human Revolution, some video games news as well. Then we'll have the some TV stuff in the last half hour, which is a look back at Big Brother, Seven Dwarves, and also Wilfred. A look ahead, some more programmes coming up, and also a bit of TV news. So first of all, The Nomad Soul. Now, this came out in 1997, so I'm going back a little while, but it's something that sprang to mind recently. Because, I mean, there's no games that come out every... Well, there are games out every week, but not one that you can really talk about at length on air. But in this game, The Nomad Soul originally started life as Omicron, the name of the city in which the game is set. The idea is that you are contacted by KL, a man from a parallel universe that's desperately in need of help. And, of course, only you can save them. You enter the world of Omicron and the soul of KL, taking control of his body. But you must look after it because it's the only one he's got. If you do get killed, though, someone else's body will take his place and your soul will be transferred. The game is nothing if not ambitious. It boasts an epic adventure storyline with unprecedented depth and realism as you aim to solve the many puzzles that prevent you from escaping alive. Shooting and combat, Virtua Fighter style, are included, as is motion capture by several martial arts world champions. Finally, it declares that you're about to be placed in a huge living environment in real-time 3D with hundreds of passers-by and vehicles to interact with. Lots of puzzles, other characters to interact with. Sounds very much like other 3D adventure games such as Tomb Raider and Resident Evil. And the similarities don't end there. You can only carry a certain number of items in your sneak, a control panel based on your left arm which you appear to pick at Predator style as you access certain items, some of which can be combined with others. If you've got too many on board, simply transfer some to the Multiplan virtual locker, and if there's another locker around elsewhere, you can pick the items back up again to use. Yes, it's exactly like the chests in Resident Evil. If you need to get about, you can walk if you know where you're going, or otherwise save yourself the time and hassle and call the slider, a taxi service that picks you up and drops you outside your chosen destination, picked via the sneak. Finally, if you're really lucky, you'll come across David Bowie actually making an appearance somewhere in the game. Now, the graphics, obviously this is at the time, the graphics are the best thing about this game, although based on the minimum specification at the time, you wouldn't have much of a problem with it providing there's little on screen, which really limited you to indoor scenes, in which the movement of your character is not much different to that of Lara Croft. Go outside, though, and when people and cars are moving around at once, it'll slow down to a crawl. The sound is very good too. Typical in-game sounds such as running, fighting and walking aren't much to shout about, but in some scenes there are surround sound moments worth a listen. And the game also contains an original soundtrack by David Bowie and his Tin Machine partner Reeves Gabrils, including 8 songs from Bowie's then latest album, Hours, including Thursday's Child. He was playing that song back recently, which made me cast my mind back to this game. The playability is the main problem with this game, though. It's marketed as a go-anywhere-and-do-anything game, and anything but linear. But in fact, that's just how it feels when you play it. When you come across any character in the game, if you don't need to speak to them, Kale will either say, "He looks busy," or the person will politely tell you to go away. You can interact with cars as well, but that's called trying to get run over. It will be the quickest way to get killed, believe me. If you do need to have a chat, a selection of phrases will appear. You select one and KL will say it. However, as the conversation goes on, you want to hear everything the other character has to say in response, so you can ask all the questions given to you. Hence, it's just a straightforward list of questions and answers, as if you had no control over it. Throughout the other parts of the game, you can only do certain things after you've done other things first, which hinders your progress until you can work it out and leaves you floundering in the dark when you can't. Overall, the Nomad Soul looks and sounds nice, but doesn't play too well and leaves you in running about in frustration, trying to find out what to do next. It would be nice to have some kind of direction here, as you'll have to fathom things out. But when you finally do, you realise you can only get on because you've finally done something elsewhere without possibly realising it at the time, making this incredibly linear experience it promised it wasn't meant to be. Executed perfectly, the game could have been quite something, but as it stands, it'll take a long time to get into even a taste of its potential, but you'll only stay for the rest if you have way too much time on your hands. So overall, I'll give that one a 6 out of 10. Graphics and sound were good, but the playability and the just enjoyment factor were pretty poor. Okay, in a moment we'll be having the top 10 games charts, but first of all, in a little while we'll be having Talk, and It's My Life. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Now, in this section, we'll be having a look at the top 10 games charts, first of all. Number 1, again, Zumba Fitness. Number 2, Lego Pirates of the Caribbean. Number 3, Cars 2. Number 4, The Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time 3D. Number 5, FIFA 11. Number 6, Lego Harry Potter Years 1 to 4. Number 7, Xenoblade Chronicles. That's out on the Wii. That's a new entry this week. Number 8, Dirt 3. Number 9, Brink. And number 10, L.A. Noire. Now, re-entries out this week. We've got number 28, Mortal Kombat, the newest version of that. Number 37 is Grand Theft Auto, episode Liberty City. And number 40, the Pokemon Black version. I think the white version is about number 39 or something like that. Okay, there's some new video games releases out this week as well. Now, autumn's nearly here, and there's a couple of big titles out this week, plus some minor ones. I'm going to start off with Deus Ex Human Revolution. Now, you play Adam Jensen, an ex-SWAT specialist who's been handpicked to oversee the defensive needs of one of America's most experimental biotechnology firms. Your job is to safeguard company secrets. But when a black ops team breaks in and kills the very scientists you were hired to protect, everything you thought you knew about your job changes. Badly wounded in the attack, you have no choice but to become mechanically augmented, and you soon find yourself chasing down leads all over the world, never knowing who you can trust. At a time when scientific advancements are turning athletes, soldiers and spies into super-enhanced human beings, someone is working very hard to ensure mankind's evolution follows a similar path. You need to discover where that path lies, because when all is said and done, the decisions you take and the choices you make will be the only things that can change it. Now, this is a game that's set in it says it's a divided near future. I think it's set in like 2027. It says it's set before the original Deus Ex game. And also I have been playing it because I've got a copy for review, so we'll have a review for you soon. It's pretty good. I mean, there's a few things that sort of seem fairly standard to all kind of first person shooters, but from what I've played so far, it is a pretty good game. I'm getting more of the love for something like Crysis 2 or Fear 3, whereas I don't know. Deus Ex Human Revolution does seem to be just a little bit on the linear side. So that's like a lot of games these days, though. Also out this week is Rugby World Cup 2011, and it's the crown jewel of sport and a prominent global property in the TV coverage. The World Rugby World Cup spanning more than 200 territories with a cumulative audience of 4 billion viewers. Now, this new game is the official World Cup game of Rugby World Cup 2011, and the premier rugby game developer. Be right in the centre of mud, sweat and tears and passion as you take your team through the pool and knockout stages, right the way to the final. Back your team, take on your hardest rivals, and fight every inch for the right to proudly lift the Webb Ellis Cup. You can have a 4-player simultaneous action during each match, online play on Xbox Live and PlayStation Network, also 5 different gameplay modes, as well as an easy and intuitive player editor. Now, I'm not a fan of rugby, so this isn't a game I'll be playing, to be quite honest. It's also the strangely titled Super Meat Boy, which is a platform game developed by Team Meat, and is a successor to Macmillan and Jonathan McEntee's Flash game Meat Boy, originally released in 2008. Now, Super Meat Boy was released on Xbox Live Arcade on October last year and PC the following month. Versions for the Mac and Linux are planned for future release. The game follows Meat Boy as he attempts to rescue his girlfriend Bandage Girl from the villainous Dr. Fetus through over 300 levels filled with deadly hazards. The game receives acclaim from critics and received the award for the most challenging from IGN in 2010, and also received awards for best downloadable game from GameSpot and Game Trailers that year. Critics lauded the game's precise control, unique retro art style, and soundtrack by Danny Baranowski. Reviewers generally praised the game's high difficulty, though some warned that not all consumers would appreciate the difficult levels. The game has been a commercial success, though, having sold more than 600,000 copies. As also, the bonus pack includes a soundtrack, sketchbook, full comic poster, and exclusive T-shirt. Okay, so that's your video games releases out for this week. And at the moment, we'll be having some video games news. But first of all, we'll be having some music with Martika and Love That Will Be Done. This is 106.6.
106.6.
And this section will have a look at some video games news, starting with the fact that the Angry Birds, Bejeweled and Zynga form part of the new Google Plus game service. The free games channel, which is rolling out across the network, includes games by Rovio, PopCap, Zynga and BioWare. When games are available to all users, a new games button will appear at the top of each user's Google Plus stream, giving access to the games and allowing players to view game updates from people in their circle. Game updates will remain separate from a user's circle streams, preventing the clogging of news feeds experienced by some Facebook users with games. Google announced, you can see the game updates, latest game updates from your circles, browse the invites you received, and check out games that people you know have played recently. The games page is also where your game accomplishments will appear, so you can now comfortably share your latest high score, and your circles will only see the updates when they're interested in playing the games too. Games currently available on Google Plus include Angry Birds, Bejeweled Blitz, Bubble Island, Crime City, Monster World, and Sudoku and Zynga Poker. Now, I tried registering with Google Plus, and then realised it's completely pointless as it's come too far late to try and capitalise on what Facebook are doing, even though Facebook can be, quite frankly, total rubbish at times, but put it politely. But, yeah, I mean, if it's for you, then there you go. But, yeah, I don't tend to play games on Facebook anyway, so I've got an Xbox for that. And also, there's news that Rage is to have a 22GB install on the Xbox 360. This has been revealed by John Carmack about the Xbox 360 version of Rage. Now, this version will ship on 3 DVDs with 2 discs dedicated to the game's single-player campaign and a 3rd disc for the Rage's multiplayer content. On the 360, we don't have a partial install option. It's all or nothing, which is kind of unfortunate, Carmack said during his QuakeCon 2011 keynote speech. It means you have to install 22GB of stuff, which does take a long time, but if you've got it and you play it on 360, that's the way to go. Past Xbox 360 titles to ship on multiple discs have given users the option to install each disc individually, but Rage won't have this option, so it's basically all or nothing. Carmack continued, once you get everything from memory, it works pretty good. But if you're coming straight from the hard drive, then the first time you walk into everything from the DVD or from the Blu-ray, even worse in terms of total latency times, you listen to that Blu-ray churning around as it's pulling everything in. Now, I've only got a 20GB hard drive on mine. That's mostly full, so I'm not about to play this particular game, to be honest. There's also the news that Ridley Scott is creating original content for the Call of Duty Elite subscription service. The Alien and Black Hawk Down director will be working alongside Activision to develop exclusive episodic entertainment content for Call of Duty users. Scott joins the Office executive producer Ben Silverman and Arrested Development stars Will Arnett and Jason Bateman in creating original programming for the service. Just like any other passion that people spend a lot of their free time doing, Call of Duty players share a common language and a common experience, and we think we can create some entertainment content that they will love and talk about and share, said CEO Eric Hirschberg. Ridley Scott is currently working on Prometheus, a science fiction film that began life as an Alien prequel. Currently in beta, Call of Duty Elite will offer a free Facebook-inspired social network and extensive stat tracking tools. In June, Activision revealed it had engaged top Hollywood talent to work on a TV show exclusively for subscribers. And Call of Duty Elite will be available in full with the launch of Modern Warfare 3 on November the 8th. Okay, so that's all your video games news for this week. And in a moment, we'll be having a look at some TV stuff and some TV programmes watched in the past week. First of all, we'll have another little bit of music. We'll have Phil Oakley and Together in Electric Dreams. This is 106.6.
106.6.
In this last half hour, we're looking at some TV things, starting off with some TV programmes watched in the past week. Starting with Seven Dwarves, which started last Tuesday, and unsurprisingly is a 7-part series. Now, during the Christmas pantomime season all across Britain, many dwarves take on paying roles in the theatre. This brand new observational documentary series follows the lives of 7 dwarf actors as they live together and perform in a production of Snow White at Woking's New Victoria Theatre. 7 Dwarves offers a rounded insight into the personal and professional lives of the dwarves and aims to cut across some of the preconceptions that small people often encounter. The first episode is Max's tale. In his telemarketing job, Max's 4-foot-2 height isn't an issue. something that isn't the case when he leaves his friends and family to perform on stage for 8 weeks over Christmas. The Doors went through 7 weeks of constant 24/7 filming. It shows them in their work and also follows them socially too. Later on in the series, we see Josh hiring himself out for stag do's in order to get handcuffed to the bridegroom. Now, this first one, first episode, it was Max's tale. I say he was usually a telemarketer by day, and he's doing this panto for his 12th year in a row. Basically, the rest of the episode saw him just going out playing golf with his dad, and he even talked about how the fact that most of the women he's had a relationship with what he calls average height, but that now he's going out with Karen, one of the other dwarves, things are a little bit different. Then we also see the first day of rehearsal. Also, there's one day when they got snowed in a little bit and they wonder whether it's all going to actually happen. But Josh is also shown to have come from three generations of dwarves, as both his mum and granddad were actually Ewoks in the original Star Wars films. We saw Max going for rehearsal in a new comedy movie, My Big Fat Gypsy Gangster, and also meets up with Ricky Grover. They're also shown at home chatting, drinking and smoking and playing out in the snow when there's been a heavy snowfall overnight and beyond. And then finally we saw their first performance, which was a triumph. There was a clip of the second episode as well, which looked to be just more of the same, showing more pieces to camera as the dwarves chat in turn about their lives and more about the relationship between Max and Karen, for example. But I can't see if there's going to be any way, but you're going to be much in the way of progression with this, so I'm not sure if I'm going to be tuning in for the second one or any others. But if you are, it's on tonight at 9 o'clock. Now, it's also on tonight, well, every night, unfortunately, it's the return of Celebrity Big Brother, which is now back on Channel 5. Now, in this one, the housemates now live in a plush pad complete with a spa area, outdoor pool and a 5-star gym. Also, a trendy living room, luxurious bedroom with sumptuous bedding and a sweeping spiral staircase from which contestants will enter and leave the house when they are evicted. Now, for me, Big Brother was big news originally, but in recent years, when it comes to the regular series, we've had winners such as Thingy and Who's It and Whatchamacallit. I mean, you can remember just who was previously won by the first few. Well, obviously, second one was Brian Downing, who now hosts the show. And he said the rumours were plenty about who was going to be in the house, but it just looked like they were all over the place. One of the first people in was Kerry Katona, the first thing that came out of her mouth was she just said, "I'm cacking it. If this was Scratch and Sniff TV, you'd be able to smell me." Nice. There was Tara Reid, another non-surprise, and spending her honeymoon away from her husband with 3 weeks on a reality TV show. Paddy Doherty, one of the apparent stars of Big Fat Gypsy Wedding, which I watched 5 minutes of and switched off. Then afterwards, Brian Dowling introduced Jedward, and they played Amy Charles' video instead, but neither would be welcome. We've got Darren Lyons, a celebrity paparazzi bloke. Sally Berko, wife of the Speaker of the House of Commons, which is all she's famous for, as well as dressing in a bedsheet for a fashion shoot. And Brian said, "Like Carla Bruni, Sally is taller than her husband." Well, you could say everyone's taller than John Berko. And then we had a guy who I thought was a member from JLS, but apparently it was an actor from Corrie and Waterloo Road called Lucian Laviscount. Also got Pamela Hasselhoff, Bobby Sable, a model I never heard of, and then Jedward did appear. And Brian Dowling said, "With her hair, Kerry looks like she could be in Jedward." Is that a euphemism? Who knows? And then to add insult to injury, came with Big Brother's Bit on the Side, the follow-on programme, with Emma Willis trying to outdo Davina McCall in the How Pregnant Am I stakes. And then Channel 5 sank to new depths with a fake dog that urinated all over the stage. Well done, Richard Desmond. You really excelled yourself there. So I watched that one, and I'm not watching any more. I don't even care who wins out a whole lot, to be honest. And then after that, it'll move on to the main show itself. In a moment, we'll be having a look at Wilfred, which is also on in the past week, and some shows that are coming up, but we'll have a little bit of music first. I'm going to have My Life Story by Angie Stone. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Now, we're going to have a look now at, well, another programme I watched in the past week, which was Wilfred, an offbeat comedy series about a man who starts to see his neighbour's dog as a man in a canine costume. At the end of his tether, Ryan encounters his attractive neighbour's dog, Wilfred, but to Ryan, the animal appears all too human, and is far from being man's best friend. Ryan, Elijah Wood, takes his own life by downing a cocktail of drugs just after completing the third draft of his suicide note, but he just can't seem to die. His hot neighbour, Jenna, Fiona Gubelman, knocks on his door and wants him to look after her dog for the day. However, we get to see that the dog, Wilfred, is portrayed by Jason Gann, the man in a dog suit. The joke being that only Ryan can see Wilfred as the man in a dog suit. Now in this episode, there was two episodes last week. The first one we had Ryan tried to give him a glass of water, but instead Wilfred lit up a bong, took a drag, and then passed it over to Ryan. Ryan was meant to start a new job in hospital as a clinical administrator, but just passed out and overslept. Similar supposed hijinks ensue, was such as getting back at a man who revved his motorbike in the middle of the night by breaking into his house, stealing his hydroponics setup, and pooing in his shoes. And then, in the second episode, I remember it started with Wilfred chopping down a fence with an axe, just followed by lots more implausible things, and it just all just completely washed over me. It just wasn't doing it for me whatsoever. I think it's divided opinion in America as well, where it first broadcast. Overall, it's just a show with one joke, which to me wasn't funny in the first place. Some stuff that's coming up on Wednesday, tomorrow night at 9 o'clock, we've got Mount Pleasant, which it says is a who's who of British talent, from Sally Lindsay to the legendary Bobby Ball, plus Sean Reeves and Pauline Collins, who take up residence in a homegrown comedy that's honest, relatable, and big on laughs, it says here. Now, it looks like a soap, and I'm not convinced that, as it seems to have the same production values as those that washing powder advert, where they're all on cleaner close. And I don't know, I'll give it a shot. I'll see if it's any good, but they stretch it out for an hour. So, we'll see. 9 o'clock tomorrow night on Sky One. Now, returning this Saturday is Doctor Who at 10 past 7. The first episode is called Let's Kill Hitler. And the desperate search for Melody Pond sees the TARDIS crash landing in 1930s Berlin as a time-travelling drama returns. There, the Doctor comes face-to-face with the greatest war criminal in the universe. Oh, and Hitler. Old friendships are tested to the limits as the Doctor suffers the ultimate betrayal and learns a harsh lesson in the cruelest warfare of all. As precious time ebbs away, the Doctor must teach his adversaries that time travel has responsibilities, and he must succeed before an almighty price is paid. Now, I love the first six episodes that Stephen Moffat made after he took over last year, but from Amy's Choice onwards, the series really fell apart, and the Christmas special was appalling. So far, this year's shows have been equally disappointing, but let's just hope there's some good stuff coming up, but I'm not holding my breath, to be honest. So that's on Saturday, it's 10 past seven. And so that's the new stuff that's coming out this week, and also some reviews. And we have some TV news in a little moment. But first of all, a little bit of music. We'll have the Style Council and Shout to the Top. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Now we're back. I've got some TV news in this last section. The news that's first part is that Ask Rod Gilbert is to return to BBC One. And it's a panel format hosted by Welsh stand-up comedian Rod Gilbert. Debuting in September 2010, the show offered the public and celebrities the opportunity to ask the panel to provide definitive answers to the type of baffling questions that keep Rod Gilbert awake at night. Questions posed during the eight-part first series included, is it true that dogs cannot blow? And who would win in a race, Usain Bolt or a grizzly bear? Each week, the Welsh comic was joined by the Inbetweeners star and fellow stand-up comedian Greg Davis and Lloyd Langford. I think it was just his, he got a flatmate or something. They were accompanied by a celebrity authenticator, whose job it was to check any answers and root out any interesting facts, as well as a guest comedian and a celebrity. The second series will be comprised of eight further episodes, four recorded at the BBC's Pacific Quay Studios in Glasgow, and four at the BBC Blackstaff Studio in Belfast from the 8th of September. Also, there's news that Chris Addison is to replace Russell Howard on Mock the Week, which has now been confirmed by the BBC he will be a regular panellist. We look fairly regular anyway from having been on quite a lot. The panel show is currently on a break in the middle of its 10th series to allow its regulars and guests the chance to attend the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, as the series is recorded at BBC TV Centre in London. When the series resumes for the 7th episode of the run on Thursday 8th of September, Chris Addison will take a regular position on Hugh Dennis's team in the seat vacated in January 2010 by Frankie Boyle. At the same time, Russell Howard, a regular panellist since the show's 4th series, will not return. He had been absent from the first half of Series 10 in June and July due to existing touring commitments, but had been expected to return in September. A BBC spokesman said of Addison's appointment, "Chris is a great addition, a great signing for the autumn run. With party conferences and major sporting events coming up, I imagine he'll be given a roving role as he has the ability to supply quality ammunition for Dara in the centre, as well as the confidence to go it alone." With appearances from the likes of Mickey Flanagan, Milton Jones, Ed Byrne, Stuart Francis, Miles Chupp and Ava Vidal in the pipeline, it looks like Mock the Week really will be the panel show to watch this season. As I say, that returns on BBC 2 on the 8th of September at 10 o'clock. Also in the news, I've got the X Factor viewing figures. The first episode was watched by an average of 10.5 million people on ITV, according to the initial overnight viewing figures. The 8th series of the talent show is the first without Judge Simon Cowell, who is developing a US version of the show. He's been replaced by Take That's Gary Barlow, pop singer Kelly Rowland, and Chulisa from N-Dubs. Last year's opening episode achieved overnights of 11.1 million, the highest in the show's history, so it's certainly on the slide there. And finally, there's also the news that Frank Skinner has been announced as the new host of Room 101 by production company Hattrick. A popular chat format in which celebrities have the chance to cast the things they hate most into Room 101. The most horrible and frightening place in the world was last on TV in 2007, hosted by Paul Merton. Following his decision to quit the series, Hattrick announced that the show would return at some point with a new host. The format was later mooted for a relaunch as a web community for the public. Room 101's first three series, between 94 and 97, were hosted by Nick Hancock. Merton assumed presenting responsibilities in 99. Hancock had earlier hosted four series of the format on the now-defunct BBC Radio 5 from 1992 until its TV transfer. The concept of Room 101, the most awful place in the universe, was created by author George Orwell as a torture chamber in his dystopian novel 1984. Famously, George Orwell named Room 101 after a meeting room at BBC Broadcasting House. There's no further detail yet been announced regarding Series 12, but is expected to return on BBC 2 later in 2011 or early 2012. Okay, so that's all your TV news and everything for this week on the DVD Fever show. If you want to have a look at any clips of any trailers or any gaming footage, just go to facebook.com/DVD Fever show and you'll see everything on there. And just post any comments if you have any comments about anything that you've heard about on the show as well. But coming up, we've got the Aaron Mehta show at 2 o'clock. But first of all, to close, take us up to the top of the hour, we'll have FR David and Words. This is 106.6. 106.6.